the real story behind the six-pointed star. Now, you've all seen the hexagram, the six-pointed star, in jewelry, and increasingly even with a cross in the middle of it. 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3 to 5 says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ." The six-pointed star is saturating literature, jewelry, crystals, books, and other religious articles, not only in synagogues, but even in Christian churches. The hexagram decorates car bumper stickers, prayer shawls, Bibles, posters, logos, signs, and decor in homes and in walls. It flies in the flag of the State of Israel. The six-pointed star consists of two triangles, one turned upwards, the other turned downwards. The six-pointed star has been in existence for millenniums. It was called the hexagram, then the Seal of Solomon, and more recently the Star of David. But what is its origin and symbolism? You'll see here from this ancient, obviously you can see the six-pointed star right here. Here's the hexagram, and there's an idol in the middle of it, and there's an idol next to it. So this is all part of ancient pagan worship. M. Hirsch Goldberg in The Jewish Connection states, "The Star of David is not of Jewish origin, and the ancient Israelites never used it as their religious symbol." Hirsch Goldberg explains, "Perhaps most ironic, the very sign of the Jew in today's world, the six-point star, is not really the historic symbol of Jewry, nor was it used as a religious sign by the Israelites. It became the emblem of the Jewish people in 1897, when the Zionist Conference, convened by Theodor Herzl, chose it as the insignia of their movement. But even though each of the 12 tribes had their own symbol, not one tribe used the Star of David, what's called the Star of David." Mr. Goldberg observed, "Construction workers were apparently digging in Ramah near Tel Aviv when they found the six-pointed star embedded in a mosaic floor, which is about 1,200 years old. However, it was soon established that the floor was Muslim, not Jewish." That's reported in the Jewish Connection. Now, here's a picture of a medallion at a mosque in New Delhi, plainly with the hexagram with Arabic script in the middle of it. So Muslims use it very comfortably. And here you can see the six-pointed star in the Hindu deity. And here, Kali, who's surrounded with everything from snakes and so on, she's holding up the hexagram as well in her hand. The Universal Jewish Encyclopedia reported that the six-pointed star is of ancient origin. According to the Rosicrucians, they've used it forever, and it was known to ancient Egyptians and the Hindus and the Chinese and the Peruvians. There's an ancient ring, plainly with a hexagram. The Jewish Encyclopedia describes the six-pointed star as two equally lateral triangles that are interlaced so as to form a hexagonal star, every point of which touches a circle of the same radius as one of their six sides. In Amos 5, verse 25 to 27, we read, "Did you offer me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? You also carried Sikkoth, your king, and Sheon, your idols, the star of your gods, which you made for yourselves. Therefore, I will send you into captivity beyond Damascus, says the Lord, whose name is the Lord of hosts." Sheon. Remphan and Cheon were a particular star known to the ancient Egyptians and mentioned during the Exodus of the Hebrews. Now you can see two obviously Egyptian models of the Sphinx. How many hexagons can you see in this picture? Obviously there's the one right in front on the altar. There's one in the red banner here, and there's also a gold one on that white banner behind. There's at least those three. Anyone see any others?
Top of the middle chain, is that not one?
I'm not sure. It's certainly a triangle.
Yeah.
"You also took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god Remphan. images which you made to worship, and I will carry you away beyond Babylon. This is part of Stephen's excellent sermon going through the history of Israel in Acts 7 before his martyrdom. And he speaks about the star of your god, Remphan. The Jewish Encyclopedia lists the following mentions of the six-point star on an Arabic amulet in a Byzantine magic text in alchemy as a stonemason's sign, in the coat of arms of the Freemasons as the order of the seal of Solomon. The Jewish Encyclopedia reports that from the 16th century on, the hexagon, the six-point star symbol, began to be used by Jewish people. It was associated to the Kabbalist Isaac Luria. Now, the Kabbalah is very occultic, but it's Jewish occultic. Until the 16th century, the menorah, the seven-pointed candlestick, had been accepted shield of David. That was the symbol of David. David never knew anything about a six-pointed star. However, from the 16th century on, the six-pointed star began replacing the menorah on synagogues and on Jewish religious articles. And the Jewish Encyclopedia states that it is only in Jewish sources that the interlaced triangles are called the Shield of David, because non-Jewish sources call the symbol the Seal of Solomon. The Jewish Encyclopedia describes Isaac Luria as a Kabbalist. Lived in the 16th century, he claimed one man could be master of the terrestrial world. The writing of amulets, the conjuration of devils, magic jugglery with members led to his increase as the influence of the school spread. So this is the first time you see Jews using the six-pointed star that we know of. Just as many Christians today are using astrology, what's your star sign, what do the stars say today, and so on, without knowing how dangerous it is. Many Jews use the Talmud without understanding how steeped in occultism it is. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. And here you can see occultic rings with the hexagram throughout it. Occultic hexagram medallions and with all kinds of occultic signs and on t-shirts too. People involved in witchcraft use this a lot. Jeremiah 9 verse 5, everyone will deceive his neighbor and will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves to commit iniquity. Deception is pervasive. In Revelation 20 verse 1 to 3, we read that Satan is deceiving the nations. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he might deceive the nations no more. So Satan is deceiving nations now. Revelation 12 verse 7, and war broke out in heaven, and that serpent of old called the devil and Satan who deceives the whole world. We are taught in Revelation 12 verse 9, Satan who deceives the whole world. This is a theme, you can see the point. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 4, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. 2 Timothy 4 verse 3 to 4 tells us, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers, and they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. But I fear lest somehow, as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. So 2 Corinthians 11 verse 3 brings it from the world down to we ourselves are in danger of being deceived. The Jewish Encyclopedia describes the hexagon, the six-point star, as the magic seal of King Solomon. The Jewish Almanac reports the six-pointed star or hexagon is not Jewish. Now that's incredible, because most people swear it's about as Jewish as you can possibly get. Muslims call it the Seal of Solomon. Here's a mosque with the hexagon outside. It's quite clear. The Muslims see it as theirs, but they call it the Seal of Solomon. The shield carried by King David in the battlefield was engraved with the name of God and with the menorah, the seven-pointed candlestick. There's no biblical, there's no historical evidence, there's no archaeological evidence to ever suggest that King David used the six-pointed star. So to call it the Star of David is dishonest or ignorance at best. Leviticus 19:11 says, "You shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another." You see, deception and theft go together. All lies bind. All lies bring bondage, and no lie is actually harmless. Isaiah 59, verse 14 to 15, "Justice is turned back and righteousness stands afar off, for truth is fallen in the street and equity cannot enter. So truth fails and he who departs from evil makes himself a prey." Jeremiah 7, 28, "This is a nation that does not obey the voice of the Lord, their God, nor receive correction. Truth has perished and has been cut off from their mouth." How and why did the Star of Remphan become the seal of Solomon and what they call today the Star of David? We read in 1 Kings 11, verse 6, "Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the abomination of the people of Ammon. And he did likewise for all his foreign wives who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. So the Lord became angry with Solomon, because his heart had turned from the Lord God of Israel, who had appeared to him twice, and had commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. But he did not keep what the Lord had commanded." 1 Kings 11, 6-11. 1 Kings 11, 6-11 tells us, "Therefore, the Lord said to Solomon, because you have done this and have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom away from you and give it to your servant." One of the idols worshipped by Solomon was Ashtoreth, otherwise known as Astarte, which means star. 2 Kings 22, verse 13. "Go inquire of the Lord for me, for the people and for all Judah, concerning the words of this book which has been found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is aroused against us, because our fathers have not obeyed the words of this book to do according to all that is written concerning us." This is what happened when excavations were going on, the cleaning out in the temple. They found the book of the law, been forgotten for a long time. And when the king read the words of the law, he was horrified to see how God's wrath was over them because of their disobedience to his laws. Arthur Koestler in the 13th tribe writes about the six-pointed star. Now, the 13th tribe is about the Khazarians who converted to Judaism because they were between Muslims and between Christians, and they thought, well, Muslims and Christians both put up with Jews. So as a tribe with no connection to Abraham, no connection at all to any of the 12 tribes of Israel, they just chose to convert to Judaism. In fact, many of the people today come from what they call the Khazars, or from the Ashkenazic Jews. And in fact, they're the ones who particularly dominated banking and so on. So they're not even connected to Abraham, but they called the 13th tribe. And this is accepted in Tel Aviv University. It's accepted in Jewish history that it's true. They're the 13th tribe. Well, Arthur Koestler, writing about the 13th tribe, says, "The six-pointed star, or the hexagram, is a magical emblem which dates back only to the 12th century AD. At that time, an Ashkenazic Jew, Menahem ben Duji, tried to convince his people that he was the Messiah. And he changed his name to David Elroy and amassed troops in Khazaria and Kurdistan and was assassinated on his way to liberate Palestine." And he used this six-point star. So when they say Star of David, many people think King David. But maybe they're talking about David Elroy. From the 13th century on, the six-point star was attributed to him and first appeared in Jewish flag in Prague in 1527. The Encyclopedia Britannica identifies the six-point star as a magical sign which practical magic Kabbalah popularized the use of what they call the Magen David, or the Star of David, as a protection against evil spirits. So it's magical spirit. But again, which David are they talking about? The Jewish Encyclopedia mentions another David in volume 12, telling of a 3rd century tombstone of Leon ben David on the synagogue of Capernaum in Galilee, and it claims that he was someone who used the six-point star. Well, that's hard to prove. It's a long time ago, but It's there in Jewish Encyclopedia. They also claim the six-point star was known to the ancient Egyptians. Considering a mixed multitude came out of Egypt, and they were even worshipping the golden calf in the wilderness within the shadow of the mountain of God, it's possible they brought out this as well from Egypt. The six-pointed star you find all over the place. 2 Kings 23:13, then the king defiled the high places that were east of Jerusalem, which were on the south of the Mount of Corruption, which Solomon, king of Israel, had built for Ashtaroth, the abomination of Sidonians, for Chemosh, the abomination of the Moabites, and Milcom, the abomination of the people of Ammon. According to the doings of the land of Egypt, where you dwelt, you shall not do. And according to the doings of the land of Canaan, where I am bringing you, you shall not do, nor shall you walk in the ordinances. This is in the law of God in Leviticus 18, verse 3. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and served the Baals, and they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. Judges 2. And they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them, and they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger, and they forsook the Lord, and they served Baal and the Ashtaroths. And what did Baal and the Ashtaroths require? Innocent blood, human sacrifice, baby sacrifice. What characterized the Ashtaroths and Baal worship and Moloch worship and Cronus worship was gross immorality, pornographic idols, and human sacrifices, especially of babies. Psalm 106, verse 36, they served their idols, which became a snare to them. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons and shed innocent blood, the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan. And the land was polluted with blood. Look at this interesting monument. Can you see the six-point star formed by its shape? Thus they were defiled by their own works and played the harlot by their deeds. Therefore the wrath of God was kindled against his people so that he abhorred his own inheritance. And he gave them into the hand of the Gentiles, and those who hated them ruled over them. I despise your feast days, and I do not savor your sacred assemblies. Amos 5:21. The Pictorial Bible Dictionary notes that Chion is sometimes called Kaiwan or Kion, which means star. What they call the star of Saturn was worshipped as a god, and you can see here the star in the window pane, but then it's like something else shining through it, as though it's a star of, and they call this Saturn. We'll show more evidence of that later. Amos 5 verse 26 is repeated in Acts 7 verse 43, and references the star of your god, Remphan. And the word Remphan means the star. In the Interpreter's Bible, it notes that Chion was a star, an object of idolatrous worship. You also carried Chion, your idols, the star of your gods, which you made for yourself. The Encyclopedia Judaica reports it is not clear in which period the hexagram was engraved on the seal of Solomon, mentioned in the Talmud as a sign of his dominion over the demons. It goes on to say that the seal of Solomon or hexagram was widely used in Arabic magic. In the book Ancient Pagan Symbols, reported in the Sorcerer's Handbook, the triangle, the geometric emblem of three things, one of above two, and two lower unite to protrude higher, or the union of a positive and negative forces to produce the third, is the most complex and mystical, as it is the most uncompromising of all symbols. This is the very soul of magic, astrology, and divination. That's a direct quote from the Sorcerer's Handbook and Ancient Pagan Symbols. The Encyclopedia of Occultism declares that the six-point star is the chief magical diagram for special rites. In fact, it's used for satanic worship. It's a symbol on the satanic Bible and all the rest. The book goes on to talk about the Hindu triad and the Buddhist triad. Now, just look at these vast amounts of replications of the hexagon here with Kali and with all the other Hindu deities. And it's in Buddhism too. According to the Sorcerer's Handbook, King Solomon, traditionally known as an arch-magician, used a spell to banish infernal beings sent by the king of demons to extract human hearts. Notice Cronos being depicted here on the far right, is also known as Saturn, Saturn being a planet. In The History and Practice of Magic by Paul Christian, the six-point star is called the Talisman of Saturn. Now, it was used in the practice of worship to Ashtoreth and Moloch long before Solomon was born, an all-powerful talisman. Now, notice you've got the cube. You've got the cube within the star. You've got the star, which forms a cube, and then they have the cube on top of their forehead, often to symbolize what? Well, the hexagram, as well as hexagon, is simply a cube in two dimensions. But the three-dimensional of the cube would look like so. And now notice there's only three dimensions, height, width, and length. And then they've got the symbol of the planet Saturn, which they called a star. Today we know Saturn's actually a planet, but it was called a star for many millenniums. Only three non-parallel lines, hexagon is perfect 2D version of the cube. So the planet Saturn, and this is part of the worship of Saturn, or Kronos, or Remphan. It's part of the worship used from Nimrod, Serampus, Babylon. In Buddhism, on the far left, Moloch worship in the middle, Hinduism on the far right, not the Star of David. This is an ancient pagan occultic symbol. The book Witches, Grimoire of Ancient Omens, Portents, Talismans, Amulets, and Charms identifies the six-point stars occultic. Webster's Dictionary defines occultism as hidden, secret, mysterious, from the Latin word occultere, to conceal, of the magic arts such as magic and astrology. Bill Schnobelin, a former Satanist, said, to the sorcerer, the hexagram is a powerful tool to invoke Satan. And there's a lot of other Satanists who've converted to Christ who have testified of this. And I remember reading long ago and being quite confused when I thought that this was the Star of David, and hearing in books read like Set Free to Serve Christ and people who used to be Satanists saying this is an occultic symbol. And I had great trouble believing it. There's this disconnect, because how could it be possible? How could all these Christians be wrong? Leviticus 20 verse 6 says, and the person who turns to mediums and familiar spirits to prostitute himself with them, I will set my face against that person and cut him off from his people. You know, would you willingly wear a hammer and sickle? I'm afraid there are some people who do, even though it's got the blood of how many hundreds of millions of victims. Well, this occultic symbol's got a huge amount of blood on it. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. And Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father David. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem, and for Moloch, the abomination of the people of Ammon. This is about as occult a symbol as you can get. And lo and behold, Papa the Pope, His Holiness, although the Bible says no one is holy, and the Holy Father, the only time the word Holy Father is used in the Bible is when it's referring to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. The Lord used that prayer in the garden, and Jesus said, no one is good except God alone. He's called His Holiness. What has He got in His hat? What is that? He has got this hexagram on Papa the Pope's crown as well. It's the Star of Remphan, not the Star of David. For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ, said the Apostle Paul, Galatians 1:10. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Jeremiah 17:9. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witnesses, blasphemies. There's a lot of falsehood out there. We have been lied to and deceived on so many levels. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal truthfully are His delight. Proverbs 12:22. God will punish false witnesses. In Proverbs 19 verse 9 we read, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who speaks lies shall perish. I've challenged some people about this, about the use of the symbol as though it's something Christian, and saying it's a Star of David. And even when they know it's not true, they continue to do it because it's expected, what gets people being positive and people don't want to hear the truth. Do we think that God is pleased with that kind of cowardice? For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all the ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Romans 1:18. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying wonders and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they may be condemned who did not believe the truth but had pleasure in unrighteousness. This applies to so many things in life. But the cowardly, first on the list of the eight categories of people God hates, the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars, shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Revelation 21:8. James 4 verse 4 says, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity, hatred with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. We're involved in a world war of worldviews. The six-pointed star hexagon was adopted by the Rothschild family and put on their coat of arms. Mayor Amschel Bauer, who later changed his surname to Rothschild or Redshield, lived between 1744 and 1812. He had five sons, Amschel Mayer, who remained in Frankfurt and ran the biggest bank in Germany, Solomon Mayer, who settled in Vienna, Austria, ran the Bank of Austria, and Nathan Mayer, who settled in London and set up the Bank of England, and Karl Mayer, who settled in Naples, Italy, and set up the Bank of Italy, and James Mayer, who settled in Paris in 1812 and set up the Bank of France. Since the 17th century, the House of Rothschild has dominated the banking houses of Europe. And it goes all the way down. And they dominated all the great houses of Europe and later America in running the banks. The only country in Europe that did not manage to get a bank in was Russia, Tsarist Russia, which is why their main goal in the First World War was the destruction of Russia. And, of course, that was done. Nathan Rothschild said, I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire. And I control the British money supply. Who controls issue of money controls the government. There's a book here by John Robertson, Born in Blood, The Lost Secrets of Freemasonry. The Freemasons and the banksters really work together. Now, by the way, I don't know if you have noticed how the actual symbol for Freemasonry not only overshadows the Rothschild six-point star, but it was put on the flag of East Germany, the DDR, Deutsche Demokratische Republik. So they had the Freemason symbol that openly, flying over Berlin after they conquered it in the Second World War. You will see the six-point star of a Freemason temples, of course. But nothing conspiratorial here, folks. It's all in your heads. You know, keep moving. Nothing to see. James Madison, who wrote the American Constitution, said, history records that the money changers have used every form of abuse, intrigue, deceit, and violent means possible to maintain the control of a government by controlling money and its issuance. There's a lot that we can say about that. In 1897, Dr. Theodor Herzl conducted the first Zionist conference in Basel, Switzerland, and the six-point star was adopted as a symbol. This is according to Who's Who in Jewish history. In exchange for the promise to bring America into the First World War on the side of Britain and France, Lord Alfred Balfour of the British Foreign Office addressed a letter to Lord Rothschild that Britain would ensure that a Jewish state was established in Palestine following the war. So what happened was, by 1916, the war was at such a stalemate and everything had failed. And even the great Battle of the Somme, where the British had poured 650,000 lives lost on the British side. They lost more men in one battle in the First World War than lost on all sides in 6 years of the Second World War. The Battle of the Somme was catastrophic. First day, they lost something in the region of 60,000 men. Casualties the first day. They carried on the battle for 4 months. And they gained 4 miles which I lost shortly thereafter, after that 4 months and 650,000 lives poured into this meat grinder. And everyone wanted an end to the war. And the Kaiser was offering end to the war. Let's all return to reset back to our original boundaries. And Britain was tempted to accept this. And at that point, Lord Rothschild approached the British and said, we can bring America into war. You don't need to accept peace. You can push through to victory if you can bring America. Well, how was that possible? America was 85% isolationist, not interested in the war, hostile to the war. In fact, it was an important emphasis of the first American president, George Washington. Never get involved in Europe's wars. Avoid entangling alliances. And so America had a very strong principle of don't get involved in Europe's wars. And 85% of Americans were convinced, no, we don't want to be involved in the First World War. And the intrigues that were involved to bring America in on the First World War, and there's a lot one can say about that, the treachery of Woodrow Wilson, who campaigned under the slogan 1916, he kept us out of the war. And immediately that was over, he got them into the war. But Lord Rothschild said, we can get America involved in the war. And the British said, how? He said, don't worry about that. We control the media. We can do it. We want from you guarantee that we get Palestine, which then was under the hands of the Turks. But the British were about to defeat the Turks. And looking at it, they said, we want that. You give us Palestine, we will get you America in on the side of the war. And that's the Balfour Declaration. Dear Lord Rothschild, I have pleasure in conveying to you, much pleasure, on behalf of His Majesty's Government, the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's Government view with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. I'd be grateful if you could bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. Signed, Lord Alfred Balfour. This is the Balfour Declaration that brought America in on the war and got... And by the way, at the same moment that he is making this, Lawrence of Arabia was authorized by the same British Foreign Office to promise the Arabs that the British were going to give them the very territory they were promising to the Jews at the same time. So talk about duplicity. But that's another story. Rabbi Shulam ben Schenzenhorn wrote, but the Zionists are far more cunning in the evil and have made nationalism a substitute for Torah and commands. Make no mistake, not all Jews are Zionists. Not all Jews support Zionism. And there's a lot of Orthodox Jews who say it's an abomination, the state of Israel. Mendelstam, in his open letter, states, a Jew was not one who fulfilled the commandments, but one who's a Zionist. The leader of Zionists has set up an idol of nationalism, rebellion against the Lord, and denial of Torah and commands on the very site of the temple of God. What are they talking about? God judged Israel for idolatry and cast them out. Of course, originally by the Assyrians, when the fall of Israel and then fall of Judah and Jerusalem into Babylon captivity brought them back. But later, he brought his wrath down upon them in AD 70. They were dispersed because of their sin. And he warned them, Deuteronomy 28, blessings of obedience, curse of disobedience, Leviticus 26, Jeremiah 18. And so our nation of Israel, has been in rebellion to God. And nation of Judah, rebellion to God. God has judged us. We are dispersed. You cannot go back to the land without repentance. And to go back as a secular state with legalized abortion and pornography and LGBTQ and perversion, that's an abomination, so I've gone. And now you're waging wars and killing. So there's a lot of Orthodox Jews who are very hostile to Zionism and to the state of Israel. That may surprise some people and be news to people, but here just quoting from Zionism Reconsidered, for example. Theodore Herzl's proposed design for the Zionist movement had been a white flag with 7 gold stars. He was overruled, and the Rothschild suggestion of their emblem, the red shield, the 6-point star, was accepted. Herzl insisted that the 6 gold stars should replace the points of the hexagram, with one additional star, the 7th, being above the one on the apex. So he wanted 7 gold stars. Then he wanted the words Ara Yehuda, or the Lion of Judah, written on the flag. But neither of Herzl's requests were granted, even though he was ostensibly the founder of this movement. But the 6-pointed star of the Rothschild Red Shield became the centerpiece of the flag of the State of Israel. Okay, can anyone tell me, what are the 2 blue stripes symbolize?
Rivers.
Which rivers?
The Euphrates and Tigris.
The Euphrates and the Nile. Everything between the Euphrates and Nile belongs to us. That's basically the vision of Solomon. Remember Seal of Solomon? The vision of Solomon, we will rule from the Euphrates to the Nile, which Solomon managed to do. And so, with the intrigue and the financing of the Rothschilds, and about the only thing that the Soviet Union and the United States of America fully agreed on, both the Soviet Union and the United States sponsored and agreed to and voted for in the United Nations, the establishment of the State of Israel, which is quite astounding because you would have thought, why would the Soviet Union be for it? Well, they've benefited a lot too. Just think of all the wars that were created in the Middle East and all the huge amounts of armaments that could be sold from both sides, from the Soviets and from the Americans, and the huge amount of money that's been made in the Middle East. And do you know one out of every three barrels of oil in the Middle East has gone to pay for weapons? One in three. Big business. None of that would have been possible without a state of Israel in the middle of the Muslim world, which has created wars in a place that was a backwater where everyone was basically fast asleep. So Israel is actually a creation of the Rothschild house. Stephen Mitford Goodson, who's been a frequent guest at our Mission and Reformation Society, was director of the Southern Reserve Bank for 9 years. He was a whistleblower. He wrote Inside the Southern Reserve Bank, Its Origins and Secrets Exposed. And he later wrote a book on Jan Smuts, which exposed what Jan Smuts's role was because he established the Southern Reserve Bank. And then he wrote the blockbuster History of Central Banking and Enslavement of Mankind. It's staggering. Basically shows that the 20th century's wars have all been bankers' wars, which was a shock to me because I thought all wars came from ideology and from military and other. I didn't think economics had anything to do with wars. But Stephen Mitford Goodson showed the economic dimensions, the banking dimensions that has led to wars, which was a revelation to me. And he wrote The Genocide of the Boers, how the Rothschilds planned the genocide of the Boers through the Anglo-Boer War, specifically in order to get rid of the resistance to the Zionists controlling the gold of South Africa. And the reason why South Africa's greatest prime minister, in his words, Hendrik Verwoerd, was assassinated was because he was dismantling the Southern Reserve Bank and getting the Oppenheimers and Ruperts and so on out of control of South Africa's money supply. So his books on economics are quite staggering, including the one on Jan Smuts. Ron Paul should be known to many Americans, maybe not as many of us here. He's a very brave libertarian leader in America, and he says it's no coincidence that the century of total war coincided with the century of central banking. No jokes. And do you know that the mass murderer Leon Trotsky, the head of the Red Army, invented the word racist in 1927 to silence opposition to communism? Because if you oppose communism, you're obviously an anti-Semitic racist. Do you know where was... this is Levi Bronstein. Levi Bronstein, who you know as Leon Trotsky. Do you know where he was when the Bolshevik Revolution started? He was in the Bronx in New York. And he was meant to be a out-of-work refugee fleeing from the Russian secret police, living in the Bronx. Yet when the Bolshevik Revolution occurred and he was called by Lenin to come quickly, we need you in St. Petersburg, he declared at the border of Canada, as he is getting ready to go across there and get on a ship to go across the Atlantic, he declared hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash on his person. Where did he get that money from? Oh, the answer is given by Stephen Goodson in his books. This man was bankrolled by the millions and millions. He arrived and all his KGB people had the latest in weapons. They all were dressed out in leather outfits, full leathers. The KGB, they first called the Cheka, and they lacked nothing. The best of the Rolls Royces, the best of the trains, armored trains, weaponry, you name it. They were fully equipped by the bankers. The Rothschilds kitted out Trotsky and his whole gang of mass murderers. Now, he had to have terms like racist or anti-Semite for someone who criticized communism, because this is obviously a hate speech, racist, anti-Semitic picture depicting him overseeing the murder of millions in Russia. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the greatest Russian author and Nobel Prize winner of the 20th century, wrote, You must understand the leading Bolsheviks that took over Russia were not Russians. They hated Russians. They hated Christians. Driven by ethnic hatred, they tortured and slaughtered millions of Russians without a shred of human remorse. More of my countrymen suffered horrific crimes at their bloodstained hands than any people or nation ever suffered in the entirety of human history. It cannot be overstated. Bolshevism committed the greatest human slaughter of all time. The fact that most of the world is ignorant and uncaring about this enormous crime is proof that the global media is in the hands of its perpetrators. And it was Solzhenitsyn who first taught me not to speak about the Russian Revolution. He said, that is an insult to the victims. It's the Bolshevik Revolution, not the Russian Revolution. It's the anti-Russian Revolution. We cannot state that all Jews are Bolsheviks, but without Jews, there would have never been Bolshevism. For a Jew, nothing is more insulting than the truth, he says. The blood-maddened Jewish terrorists have murdered 66 million mostly Christians in Russia from 1918 to 1957, quote unquote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. As a survivor of the communist Holocaust, I'm horrified to witness how my beloved America, my adopted country, is gradually being transformed into a secularist, atheistic utopia, where communist ideals are glorified and promoted, where Christian values and morality are ridiculed and increasingly eradicated from the public and social consciousness of our nation. Under the decades-long assault and militant radicalism of many so-called liberal and progressive elites, God has been progressively erased from our public and educational institutions to be replaced with all manner of delusion, perversion, corruption, violence, decadence, and insanity. And who can argue with that? So, an acronym for racist could be rather annoying, communist-inspired silencing tactic. That's what racism is. So, the progression of six-pointed star. Notice, in Carthage, in Japan, in Egypt, in Cyprus, in Lebanon, Mongolia, for goodness sakes, Wales, Arabia, Iran, all over the place, from Mexico, this talisman from Ireland, Turkey, Constantinople, Russia. This is pretty pervasive, but it's probably one of the most pervasive occultic symbols on earth. So from Egyptian pagan rituals of worship, the six-point star came to be associated with the idols Ashtaroth, or Astarte, the star, and Moloch. It later became associated with King Solomon after he fell into idolatry. For millenniums, it has been used in astrology and magic arts and witchcraft and the occult, and since the 16th century, Kabbalist Judaism adopted it. And these were Ashkenazi Jews, not even the ethnic Jews, or Judeans, should we say. In the 18th century, Meyer Amschel Bauer, later changed his name to Rothschild, adopted the hexagon as a symbol of his red shield. Thereafter, it became the symbol of Zionism, the Knesset of the new state of Israel, and a centerpiece of the flag of the state of Israel. And more recently, a religious symbol worn by both Christians and Jews. And there's a lot of Christians who love their cross in the middle of a hexagram. Jewish Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion declared in an interview with Look magazine in 1962 that he looked forward to the rising political importance of men of science. Now, this is 58 years ago. Isn't that interesting? Rising importance in politics of men of science and a federation of states, having socialist and democratic regimes, a world alliance with an international police force, where the United Nations will rule from Jerusalem and settle all controversies amongst federated countries. Have we not seen that in this year, 2020, where 3 billion people, 3.5 billion people were locked down under this Wuhan virus, where they could even cancel all church services, even over Easter? Bible studies, prayer meetings, can't visit people in hospital, can't visit people in prison, even though the Bible commands you to visit people in hospital and in prison. And yet, nope, forbidden, because men of science have decreed, now you must walk around and be depersonalized by wearing a mask, from Look magazine. And the Zionist Congress has continued to meet, often in Geneva, with their old flag there. And the Rothschilds are controlling the whole deal from behind. Just look at this picture. Who can just point a finger giving instructions to a prince of the royal family in Britain? I think Prince Charles will do well. When you look at the amount of gold that's behind it, it sort of gives you a bit of an idea. As Stephen Mitford Goodson said, the U.S. Reserve Bank is not American. It has no reserves and it's no bank. And Southern Reserve Bank, he said, not South African, no reserves, no bank. And yet, today, one of the greatest movements in the world today is Christian Zionism, epitomized by false prophets like John Hagee, who, if you have not seen films like Marching to Zion, and what this man does, he has been a rabble-rouser par excellence, demanding that America nuke Iran. He's been doing this for years. You know, start a nuclear war with Iran. And the Zionist lobby in America owns just about the whole of the Congress. And it was hard to understand why they were voting the way they were and doing what they do. Because, do you know, every single year, the United States of America gives $20 to $30 billion to the state of Israel. Now, they'll acknowledge $6 to $7 billion that they give them, because that's just cash. But that's not counting the billions more they're given military technology and weaponry and all sorts of other different deals that basically the American taxpayers funding the state of Israel to the tune of about $30 billion a year. Now, that's not even counting how many billions Germany's paying every year in euros to them. Do you know that the state of Israel has received more foreign aid than every other country in all of history combined? Although the state of Israel's only exists since 1948, they get more foreign aid than all other countries in the world have ever gotten in all of history combined. In any given year, they get more foreign aid than every other country in the world combined. And then they'll say, oh, look how successful and how prosperous I am. Well, you give me $30 billion, I can be pretty prosperous too. You know, unbelievable. Why would any nation, let alone a free enterprise country, need foreign aid? It's a scam of a high order. And how is it maintained? In America, they not only own most of the Congress, but they've got bribery and blackmail material on them. And that's what came out with the whole Jeffrey Epstein case. As Jeffrey Epstein has been exposed by Mossad agents who've published books. Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad agent. Mossad is the secret police, secret service for Israel. Mossad is like Israel's CIA, okay, or Russia's KGB, or a mixture between the two. And so Mossad is known to go in for what they call honey traps, and they use every kind of, you know, sparrows and whatever. But Jeffrey Epstein set up this pedophile island in the Virgin Islands, and he would fly people in a Lolita Express, everyone from Bill Clinton to who's this woman who's so popular on TV?
Oprah
Winfrey, and all these different characters. They flew multiple times to his pedophile island, where he has this occultic cube on top of his sex worship cult thing below, where there was occultic worship with orgies and the whole thing, Moloch worship, the whole deal right there. And of course, cameras everywhere. And he got people everything their sick hearts desired, and then would film them, and he could bribe anyone. So he was providing Israel with a means to control by blackmail every congressman that was stupid enough to accept his invitations and use Congress, which is apparently a lot of them. Apparently, you're talking about hundreds of congressmen and senators were implicated in this. And of course, Hollywood and Harvey Weinstein, the whole deal, it's just the tip of the iceberg. So right now, the American people, if the American people knew, why are we sending $30 billion to a filthy rich country who then use that money to bribe our politicians and to blackmail our politicians and to buy up Christian magazines in South Africa and to buy up political parties in South Africa and to neutralize Christian groups all over the world and persecute Christians at home. And yet this false prophet, John Hagee, has said the day America turns its back on Israel, the day God will turn his back on America. Now, I've heard people, even in Cape Town, say to me that the reason why South Africa or America is having a problem is because they didn't support Israel enough. You've seen this verse before, Genesis 12, verse 3. I will bless those who bless you, I will curse those who curse you, and through you all the families of the nations will be blessed. Now, in this picture, you get the impression that if you bless the secular state of Israel, God will bless you. A secular humanist state that rejects Christ, that persecutes Christians, you can be a Jew and you can be a communist. You can be an atheist. You can be a Satanist. And you can be a citizen of Israel. You can be a pervert and be a... In fact, they've got vast amounts of pedophiles who have fled from America, Germany, Britain, and so on, living in Israel under protection, because that's the main reason Rothschild wanted a safe house where they could flee. And so there's vast amounts of these pedophiles wanted in America who are living under the state of Israel's protection. You can be any kind of pervert and be a citizen of Israel, but you can't be a Messianic Christian who believes in Jesus as a Messiah. And yet there are Christians who cry every Sunday for Israel and pray for them and send their money to them and so on. Is this verse in Genesis 12, verse 3, telling you that your blessing depends on whether you support a political state that rejects Christ? That's insane, even if you know nothing. But in fact, we've got in Galatians 3, verse 16. That's easy to remember, Galatians 3, 16. To Abraham and a seed is the promise made, not to seeds as to many, but to one seed, which is Christ. The New Testament makes it clear that you to interpret the Old Testament in the light of Christological theology, Christology. Christ is the way to understand the Old Testament. The promise was made to Abraham and his seed, the Messiah, Jesus, the son of David. Not to seeds as to many, but to one which is Christ. Therefore, for a person to take a messianic prophecy and apply it to a political state that rejects Christ is blasphemy and heresy of a high order. You are not blessed in accordance with how well you treat the state of Israel. In fact, you could say America's been cursed since it started supporting the state of Israel. Because since 1948, America's gone from being a God-fearing country to being a country where the Bible's banned in schools, Ten Commandments can't be on the walls, abortion's legal, pornography's legal, in fact, perversion's legal. In fact, you can get fired from your job for saying there's only two genders or marriage can only be between a man and a woman, and we can carry on. Now, how on earth is that being blessed? After the billions America's given to Israel, you'd think America would be the most blessed country on the planet. In fact, if this exegesis was right, which it isn't. They've broken every commandment in the book. Isn't it possible that God's angry with America because they're killing their babies? Which, by the way, is what that star of Astra is all about. Human sacrifice. And because they're into pornography, which is also what Astra and Baal worship was all about. And because they're into idolatry, which is what all of it's about. Now, there's 6 points. There's 6 sides. There's 6 triangles. Is that a coincidence? 6 points, 6 triangles, 6 stars. Revelation 2, verse 9. I know the blasphemy of those which say they're Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Now, there's several times that the Bible talks about the synagogue of Satan. This is hard. Who could that be referring to? Who uses synagogues? I mean, let's think now. This is really tough to work this one out. We're going to need some serious insights here. The synagogue of Satan. Who could Jesus be referring to? The hexagram is a 6-pointed star with 3 sixes. It contains a 6 within a 6 within a 6. 6 sides, 6 points, 6 triangles. And it's an occultic symbol. Isaiah 14, verse 12 to 15. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. This is a prophecy about Satan himself. Lucifer was an archangel who's been brought down. In Revelation 13 we read, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. Then he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Now, who has blasphemed God's name the most? Hollywood. Who runs Hollywood? Who blasphemes the tabernacle of God and those who dwell in heaven? Who are those who dwell in heaven? Christians of the past. Who blasphemes the memory of God-fearing reformers and saints and martyrs? And who has waged war against God's people more than the Bolsheviks, the Marxists, the mass-murdering Marxists and communists, and have overcome them? And Christians suffered torture for decades in the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe. And authority was given to him over every tribe and tongue and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. Stalin said, we're going to make Hollywood the congregation of atheism. As people go to church now, they will go to the cinema to worship what we lift up and put on the screen. And Hollywood was infiltrated from the earliest. And by the way, you know, they started to infiltrate churches as the highest priority in Hollywood and churches in the first Comintern, the Communist International, identified. And they said, we were the only party in town, talking about Hollywood, literally the only party in town. And they looked at the importance of infiltrating the Catholic Church. And you'd think, well, how are you going to infiltrate the Catholic Church? I mean, to be a Catholic priest, you've got to be celibate. You can't get married. This is a problem. I mean, how many people are going to want to do that? No problem. They boasted. They managed to find 1,200 homosexual communists to infiltrate the priesthood. And so you got a double whammy. The Catholic Church was infiltrated by communists who weren't even Christians, and they didn't care about this not getting married business because they were homosexuals. Now you're giving them a chance to abuse choir boys. Yay. And so this great sex scandal, which we've exposed before in a perversion scandal, it's actually a homosexual scandal. What they call a church scandal is actually, it's Roman Catholic, but it's primarily a homosexual pedophile scandal in that's infiltrated them. And they got in there in the first place because the Marxists made the Catholic Church a priority to infiltrate.
I still don't see the motive from the individual. So, I mean, the people that infiltrated...
No, but they're Marxists. They're Marxists who are being given an assignment. So they found homosexual Marxists, and they sent them in your task is to infiltrate. Dedication to the cause, playing a game just like sleeper agents, and the soul has been rotted out of the church in the West. They said the first church I managed to infiltrate was the Methodist. The Methodist Committee on Social Justice, that was their first. And then Roman Catholic was the second, and they've worked their way. And in recent years, they've managed to get into Baptist and Pentecostals that last through the social justice warrior, critical race theory, Frankfurt School logo. But you think of everyone in the world, every tribe is going to be worshipping Satan. How are they going to be doing that? Well, at the moment, Hollywood's getting people to worship evil and to revel and laugh at blasphemy. And he deceived those who dwell on the earth, and he was granted power and caused as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He caused us all, both great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive the mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, so that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. And here's wisdom. Let him have understanding. Calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of man. His number 666. Now, how do you like this thing that you go to places and they like to lift up a laser gun and aim it at your forehead? We're just taking a temperature. You can take my temperature from my wrist. You don't have to. What's the logic of pointing a gun-like instrument, a laser, at your forehead? It's preparing you for something. I mean, the whole thing is submission. Of course, it's, but it's accustoming you to being a slave. But you know what's coming next? Forced vaccinations, and they've got nanotechnology, which has been the primary focus of the Gates Foundation, is nanotechnology. They have got the ability right now to not only give you a vaccination, but in the same operation as giving you the vaccination, harvest your DNA data, which goes on file, and inject a nanochip in to track you. You wouldn't even know. They're not saying, do you want to have a nanochip that we can track you around the world? They can give you the nanochip along with the vaccination while they harvest your DNA at the same time. That Bill Gates' foundation has put billions into research, development, and patented. Now, why would they want to do that? The hexagram, the 666, is a counterfeit trinity. It's a sign of the man of sin, the son of perdition, the beast, as spoken about in Daniel 11, 2 Thessalonians 2, Revelation 16. The false prophet endorses the woeful king of Revelation 16, Revelation 19. This is a sign of perdition. A typical equilateral triangle, 60 degrees, 60 degrees, 60 degrees. Okay? Now, I'm not much at math. Somebody else worked this one out. But 60%, 60 degrees plus 60 degrees plus 60 degrees equals 180 times two triangles, 360. Six angles plus six sides plus 6 points equals 666. Adding up, adding one up to 36, etc., etc. So you can work this out yourself. Try your calculators and see how you like to do this. Is there any other symbol in the world that epitomizes 666 better than the hexagon? The beast wants to monitor who is allowed to buy or sell, and he works to prohibit those who don't have the mark from buying and selling. Now, at the moment, you've just seen how you cannot go to work or travel unless you wear this mask, fill out these papers, have this permission. Is this preparation for something? Is this a trial run for something more? Now, there are people talking about you cannot travel without a vaccination passport showing that you've had this vax. You have the chip. And they'll doubtless have it that they can stand there and they can aim at your forehead or at your wrist or whatever it is to see have you got this vax or this mark. And if there's a nano chip in you, they can even tell if you've had the vaccination or not. Prohibiting people from buying or selling. Who wants to do that? Yes, you took up the tabernacle of Moloch and the star of your god, Remphan, figures which you made to worship them. So it's in the Old Testament. It's a New Testament. It's condemned in the Bible. Do people know what they're supporting when they're supporting, oh, you've got to support the state of Israel, or, oh, just love the star? The symbol is condemned in the Old Testament, condemned in the New Testament. It's got nothing to do with King David, who's a man after God's own heart. So why are we standing by the sign? And there's so many warnings and there's so much consequence that comes from it. In fact, Tex Mars wrote the book Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star, Eye-Opening Revelations and Forbidden Knowledge About Israel, the Jews, Zionism, and the Rothschilds. This looks a real pre-mill, pre-trib type thing, but it's still a lot of interesting information amongst that. Now look at the cube of Saturn. Have you noticed the plethora of artistic? I've seen these in Australia, seen also in Paris, but here we've got in Denmark, Manhattan, Santa Ana. What is about this cube? Well, you can see the cube and this star are very, very prevalent. Is this the Star of David or the Star of Lucifer? Well, I think we've proved it's certainly not the Star of David, and increasingly it looks like there's a pretty good connection with Lucifer, the light bearer. And these are some of the top signs of the Illuminati, which is secret group, the enlightened ones. Now, you know that you had the Enlightenment. Now, Lucifer is the light bearer. The Enlightenment was a reaction to the Reformation where they were trying to say the darkened Christians. In South Africa, I remember when I moved here from Rhodesia that people who were wanting to betray this country into communism, see this country become a cesspool of immorality and pornography and so on, they were called Verluchte. Verluchte. Those of us opposed them were Verkrampte. I mean, gee, how's that for prejudicial language, you know? Yeah, it's Verkrampte. Ik is Verluchte. The Enlightenment and, the Christian ages were called the Dark Ages. Dark Ages, that's when they built the cathedrals, the great universities, stained glass windows while other people living in mud huts, you know. Europe was in the Dark Ages while it built the greatest architectural masterpieces on the planet. And yes, and we meant to follow this. So again, you can see the term Illuminati. They're following Lucifer and the Enlightenment and the Verluchtes. The hexagram is a pagan symbol with its roots in occultic magic and witchcraft. It is condemned by the God of Israel. When people like to use that and identify with 666 in their fashion statements today, you know, people are pretty far advanced in apostasy. The wicked shall be turned into hell and all the nations that forget God. Psalm 9, verse 17. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. 2 Chronicles 19, 2. Can anyone tell me the context of this verse? Who is this verse talking about? Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? I use this verse quite a lot, especially when we're talking about the communists and the United Nations and so on. But what's the original context? Who were the people that the prophet was writing about in 2 Chronicles 19, verse 2? Should you love the wicked? Who were the wicked?
I'm going to say apostate Israel, just because that's
Israel. The thing we're talking about. This was given by prophet to the Judean king. The king of Judea was about to go to the support of Israel. That's the northern kingdom of Israel, the 10 tribes. And he was told, should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of God is going to come upon you. God's judgment was upon the northern kingdom of Israel. Why? Because Israel was sacrificing babies. They were killing babies, worshipping Ashtaroth, worshipping Moloch. They were involved in apostasy. God was judging them. He was going to scatter them, destroy Samaria, scatter the northern kingdom of Israel. And yet today you've got people who say, oh, but you've got to bless Israel, you've got to support Israel. Well, why don't I quote this verse? It's far more appropriate for a nation of baby killers. We had here in this boardroom the head of the pro-life movement in Israel. She says, Israel has killed more babies than the Nazis killed. We are a nation of baby killers. I mean, do you think God's happy? Ah, you know, it's not serious because they're my people. It's okay about killing babies if you're Jews. That's fine. And that's what John Hagee says. John Hagee said that it's blasphemy to share the gospel with a Jew because they're saved already. All Jews are God's people. So Karl Marx, Vladimir Lenin, Trotsky, good to go. Expect to see them in heaven. And the ones that we've got in our country, you know, Joe Slovo, Ronnie Kasrils, all those Marxist terrorists, mass murderers. No, don't worry about that. You didn't need to share the gospel with them. They saved already because they're Jews. Really? The Rothschilds? They're all saved? That's according to John Hagee. All Jews are saved, and it's blasphemy for you as a goyim, you filthy Gentile. How dare you share the gospel with a Jew? They're God's people. You're nothing. You see, the real racial supremacists are the Jews and the Muslims. They both claim to be the best of the best. They claim to be superior to. You're the most superior of all people evolved for mankind, says the Quran to the Muslims. And the Jews claim to be they real people, and the goyim are filthy, worthless animals worthy of nothing, that no goyim has any worth at all. I mean, that's taught in the Talmud and so on. So here's a passage in the Bible that says, should you help the wicked? The thing is, God looks at the world not as Jew and Gentile, but as saved and unsaved. The most hateful thing you can do is to keep the gospel from someone who is living in rebellion to God. The most loving thing you can do for anyone, whether he's a communist, a Jew, a Satanist, a pornographer, is to share the gospel with him and give him the message of repentance, because then he may have the privilege and opportunity of repenting of his sin and being saved from that lifestyle, that death style that's leading him into hell. So to tell Christians not to share the gospel with people is actually a hate crime, I would say. To be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace, because the carnal mind is enmity, hostility to God, for it is not subject to the law of God, nor indeed can it be. Romans 8. Colossians 2 verse 8 says, beware lest anyone cheat you through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of this world, and not according to Christ. The simple believes every word, but the prudent considers well his steps. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. We must refuse to accept deception in any form. And I must tell you, the vast majority of the news media is deception. The vast majority of the entertainment industry is deception. The vast majority of what they call the education industry is also deception. If we want truth, we've got to go to the Bible, Christian sources. We've got to judge everything by the standard of God's word, not by the world. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Not the removal of your minds, the renewing of your minds, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. These are the things you should do. Speak each man the truth to his neighbor. Give judgment in your gates for truth, justice, and peace. Therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak the truth to his neighbor, for we are members of one another. God completed his work of creation, rested on the seventh day. God blessed the Sabbath day and made it a day of rest. The ark rested in the seventh month of the flood. The number seven is God's perfect number. The menorah, a seven-branched candlestick, has been a symbol of the Hebrew people since the time of Exodus. Seven candlesticks of gold were ordered for the tabernacle. In the book of Revelation, John sees a vision of the Lord in the midst of seven candlesticks. And you see the seven churches and the seven lampstands and the seven stars and the seven seals and the seven horns and the seven eyes and the seven angels and seven trumpets. Plainly, in God's book, we see seven is his number. Seven trumpets, seven bowls. All the way through, seven golden bowls. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bonds from us. Let us cast their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens shall laugh. The Lord shall hold them in derision. Then he shall speak to them in his wrath and distressed him in his deep displeasure. Yet I have set my king on the holy hill of Zion. I will declare the decree. The Lord has said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me and I will give you the nations for your inheritance and the ends of the earth for your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron. You shall dash them to pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore be wise, O kings. Be instructed, you judges of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry, and you perish in your way. When his wrath is kindled but a little, blessed are all those who put their trust in him. Psalm 2. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth. The first part of the full armor of God is truth. Truth conquers. That's the slogan of the Reformer of Prague, Jan Hus. The truthful lips shall be established forever, but the lying tongue is but for a moment. But let justice run down like river, like water, and righteousness like a mighty stream. So, any questions, comments on the six-pointed star and everything else that's come with it? These are some of the sources quoted. Questions, comments?
I'm still trying to understand why Israel's location was significant to the Rastrians. So if they were not actually originally a Jewish tribe, why that specific location? I don't understand.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's had the potential to, even though it's admitted, even by the university in Tel Aviv and so on, that 85% of people who call themselves Jews today and who live in Israel have no genetic connection to Abraham or to the Hebrews of the past. In fact, you know, the term Jew is not something you find in the Bible until about the time of the exile and the coming back from the exile. So before the time of Nehemiah and the time of Ezra, you wouldn't see the term Jew. So if a person speaks about Moses was a Jew, you know, the person is an idiot, because Moses was not a Jew. Moses was a Levite, and he was a Hebrew. You know, for example, if you would say that the first Afrikaner was Jan van Riebeck, or the Transvaal governor Jan van Riebeck landed in the Cape in 1650, there wasn't a Transvaal in 1652. You know, or the first American. No, America started in 1776. You know, the United States of America. You can't start playing games with this or talk about a person who's a member of the Orange Free State, or this person lived in Johannesburg 200 years ago. There wasn't a Johannesburg 200 years ago. And this is the thing. In the book of Exodus and Genesis, they were Hebrews. After they came out and they constituted the nation, they became Israelites. After the division of the northern kingdom and southern kingdom, you had Israelites in the north and you had Judeans in the south. The only time Judeans became Jews was after the exile when they went to Babylon, and those who came back from Babylon, the Babylonian occultic, Talmudic, changed, compromised Judeans were now called Jews. Jew is not a term that is used positively in the Bible. So, for example, just take every word Jesus ever said about the Jews. In fact, try and find one good word Jesus said about the Jews. When he said, you have your father, the devil, who's a murderer from the beginning, a liar from the beginning, you're all liars and murderers, and you're a synagogue of Satan. And so John chapter 8 or Matthew 23, Jesus didn't say anything positive about the Jews. In fact, who was the king in Palestine at the time that Jesus was born? King Herod, the Edomian. The Edomian is the Edomite. Jacob have I loved, Esau have I hated. Who was Esau? The founder of the Edomians or the Edomites. God says over and over, and even get a New Testament, Jacob have I loved, Edom have I hated. The Edomites participated in the destruction of Jerusalem, and they so took over the land and dominate that the king of Judea at the time that Jesus was born was an Edomian, Edomites. The Edomites always hated God and his people. And you see it when I went through my Old Testament survey, which is a six-year project, preaching every book in the Bible, became clear when you look at the Old Testament survey that the prophets are condemning the people living in Judea as being Edomites, as hating God and hating God's word. And so the Jews are as much Edomites as there are descendants of the Judeans and influenced by Babylonian. And so today, for a person to say King David was a Jew, no, he was not. There's no such thing as a Jew back 1000 BC. And so today, a lot of this has been messed up, sometimes by people just not knowing better, but a lot of the time deliberately. There's been an attempt by people, just like Muslims want to associate with Abraham, because Abraham's the link of the Muslims to the people of God. So through Ishmael, they've got a link with Abraham. So they make a big thing about that to show themselves that they've got a link. So these Ashkenazic Jews, or Edomites for that matter, want to have the land and call themselves Israel. They've got no right to call themselves Israel. There was even a lot of Jews at times says, we can call us Palestine, we can call us Judea, but we can't call us Israel because we're the other tribes. We don't have the other tribes. We've got Judeans here, we've got Jews here. We have the 13th tribe even, but we're the other 10 tribes. They are not here. And so to call it Israel is very presumptuous. And also again, Israel suggesting that they're the people of God, which they're not anymore. In fact, most of them are atheists and don't even have any religious faith at all. So if we've got an idea that the average Jew today is like a Hebrew in the Old Testament who's at least trying to worship the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and follow the law of Moses, we'd be mistaken. Most of them are very hostile to God, not in the slightest orthodox. And those Jews who are orthodox are hostile to Zionism, actually, because they don't see that as real. They see that as rebellion to God, because it's rebellion to God's laws, and so on. So why did they want the state of Israel? It's in a pivotal position. It's right in the middle of the Middle East. It's going to cause a lot of wars. And how much money has been made by the Rothschilds and all those people by these endless wars? And to get that, to give themselves a link to the people of God, there's a good chance that they could manage to bring a whole lot of gullible Christians to think they've got to support a political movement because there's some kind of link. Because the average Christian today doesn't read the Bible. If the average Christian read the Bible, they wouldn't be impressed even if they were descendants, because these are the people who rejected Christ. These are the people who crucified Christ. These are the people who said, we have no king but Caesar. Crucify Christ. Release Barabbas. His blood be upon us and upon our children. Yeah. Who would really, if you read the Bible carefully and read what Jesus said in John 8 and Matthew 23 and what the prophet said, and there's not one prophet who said anything nice about them. And it's all very, very harsh. So why would you want to be associated with them? But assuming the average Christian doesn't read his Bible, you can bombard them with, everyone knows enough to know that Jews, they're somewhere in the Bible, they're somewhere. We don't know much about it. Next thing, you make Moses a Jew, David a Jew, and, you know, make everything. And yet the word's not even found in the Bible till you get to the exile. So, which is the 6th century, 5th century, yes, 6th century BC. So you can see one of the things that's intriguing, how many people know about the Scofield Bible? Or have a Scofield Bible, know about a Scofield Bible. Scofield was not a good man. Scofield, by the way, went through 4 divorces and was not a very moral, upright, nor was he a theologian or anything. But Scofield got money from the Rothschilds to the tune of millions to publish the first study Bible, which injected the first gap was between Genesis 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2, where he wrote in evolution. Between Genesis 1 verse 1, when God created the world, and Genesis 1 verse 2, where the earth was formless and void, they claim that there's billions of years between Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2. God created the world, and then there's millions and billions of years between creating of man and so on. Why? Wrote that into accommodate evolution. And then continually put in things which was particularly for the Zionist movement, Theodor Herzl and so on, to promote the idea that to be a Christian you have to support Jews in Israel, and so on. And so the footnotes there, the Scofield Bible came out in full leather, all kinds of things, massive amounts of money, but he had bankers to not only finance it, but to basically subsidize. So it became so affordable and so cheap. And this dominated the landscape in Britain and America, so that there was a couple of generations of people who were predisposed to support a political movement that was going to put a group of people in the Middle East, and the bankers were financing that. So they had to get that land to show some kind of link, however tenuous, to the people of God in the Bible, to get Christians to be willing to have billions of their taxes shipped over to help these people. Although, why they would need that? If they're a successful free enterprise country, why would you need foreign aid? But you can see this is a money-making racket. There's Orthodox Jews who say there's no business like Shoah business. You know what Shoah means? Shoah is the Hebrew word for Holocaust. Holocaust is a whole burnt offering. So there's no business like Shoah business. And they have milked the world's sympathy, and they've produced not hundreds, thousands of films where the Jews are the victims and they're the good guys. There's never been a film showing Jewish mass murderers killing Christians like in the Katyn forest, killing the entire Polish intelligentsia with a bullet in the back of the head, torturing Christians throughout Russia by the millions. They won't do that. But the Jews are always the victims. They're not the culprits. And it's just people get the impression that they're the nicest people on the planet from films produced by people like Harvey Weinstein. You can see it's a racket.
Very different train of thoughts. That book you gave me, Appearance and Hope, the idea
yes.
of Romans 11 and some of the passages that talk about the mass repentance of Jewish people that will be used to bring the gospel to
yes.
more nations. What does that look like? Because clearly that's not reconcilable with the nation of Israel.
No, look, as the Lord said, there are the true people of God, and then there's the synagogue of Satan. So we should recognize there are today hundreds of thousands of Messianic Jews, or they would call themselves believers in the Messiah and so on. So obviously God is bringing his people to the Lord. But the idea that you can have an atheistic person who's one of God's people is insane. It's the letter of John says that Antichrist are those who deny Christ. So if you deny Christ, you're Antichrist. So how can you have an Antichrist person of God? or God's Antichrist people. They're my people. They're Antichrist, but they're my people. It doesn't make sense. And so you can see what's been happening here. The true... Now, again, I don't know how important it is whether there's the ethnic. You could be a person who's an Edomite, and the grace of God can break through an Edomite, even though God said, I hated Edom and loved Jacob, and be saved. And you could be somebody who's got Abraham's blood in you, but your heart is cold and hard, and you've turned away from God, and that's not going to save you. Nobody's saved by race. It's grace, not race, always. And so this emphasis on salvation by race, that if you're Jew, you're saved. If you're a filthy goyim, you're lucky if you just get the crumbs on the table or something. That mentality, which is shocking. You know, one of the prayers in the Talmud is, I thank you, God, that you did not make me a Gentile, a woman, or a dog. That is actually one of the prayers in the Talmud. I mean, quite aside from what's wrong with dogs, but the mentality, the misogynist arrogance. So when they accuse the Germans of being racial supremacists, in fact, no one's been more racial supremacist than the Jews. In fact, they've got the most stringent requirements for citizenship and so on, and they most certainly don't let just anyone come into their country. Although we've got to accept anyone coming into the country, and they've been the number one pushers of Europe being flooded by non-Europeans and so on. So, in fact, in South Africa, who ran just about the entire anti-South African operation? Jews recruited Mugabe, Mandela, in their own testimony, into the Communist Party. Jews ran the Communist Party, and the Communist Party hijacked the ANC, and to this day, the ANC is still basically run by them.
What point were the ANC hijacked?
Somewhere around 1950 is when the South African Communist Party was banned. They had already started to infiltrate the ANC, but in the 50s, they completely took over the ANC. So by 1960s, when they were getting really violent, which the original ANC was nationalist, not communist. And the original ANC actually had quite a few pastors in it and were after equal rights and so on. But the communists turned them into a violent Marxist group. And Nelson Mandela was a senior member of the Southern Communist Party, although he denied it his whole life. But when he died, everyone admitted that in his family and so on, he was always a senior member of the Southern Communist Party. And so Nelson Mandela is the one who admitted in his own book, Long Walk to Freedom, that he, without the permission and support of the head of the ANC, and without the support of the leaders of the ANC, he launched Umkhonto we Sizwe and the armed struggle, which doubtless delayed the end of apartheid by decades, as people like Prince Mangosuthu Buthelezi said, because what they wanted is a reaction. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Action, reaction, to provoke the reaction, to get the result you actually wanted. And I need to say at this point that this is what I'm concerned about these people going to Senegal, is that in many cases we can walk into a trap where we must not fight on the enemy's chosen battleground where they've put their minefields and booby traps. You don't. When the enemy invites you into an area, you could be walking into an ambush. You need to be very careful. And so for our people to think we can use the same tactics as the EFF and get the same results is insane. The EFF are allowed to do those things because the media and the courts and so on are on their side. The moment you try street mob tactics, they don't care what provocation, the media will just focus on it. One vehicle turned on the side, and it doesn't matter who set it alight, that's going to be attributed to the people who probably had nothing to do with it. And this is the sort of thing that bothers me, is that if our people aren't careful, agent provocateurs can just lead people like this Niels van der Berg, who was telling people to rise and fight and get out there and claim to be an ex from Quantum, he says we are. And this character, I think he's an agent provocateur. He's trying to stir the people up, get them out there so that they could provide a propaganda coup for the enemy, so that they can now depict themselves as law-abiding and the farmers are the terrorists guilty of rioting and damaging property and so on, which is an inversion of reality. But that's what these creeps do. In Hebrew, they've got the term shitzpah, which is, it's a cheek, but it's more than a cheek. It's like, imagine that I attack you, steal your money, beat you up, and then lay a charge against you for assault. That's shitzpah. They abuse, murder, steal, cause wars, and then they claim they're the victims, and then they demand reparations from you. That's the way it kind of works. The people who are the biggest murderers, rapists, and killers are the ones who accuse you of being thieves, murderers, rapists, and so on. It's total cheek. That's communism, and that's the Rothschilds, the banksters. Comments, questions? Yes.
With the background of the Jewish state, secular nation, and so on, what is their significance, if any, of this is a while ago now, but Trump moving the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And what did you say Trump's position is in terms of support for the?
Yes, well, bear in mind that Donald Trump is a businessman, and his one daughter is married to a Jew, and to get elected in America is a huge lobby of not. Well, the Jews may not be a large amount of voters, but they've got a huge amount of influence. But the evangelical Christians who support Zionism is colossal. That's in the tens of millions in America. So you cannot win if you're perceived as anti-Jewish. Now, a token such as moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is of immense symbolic value to the people who weep and wail and dance with the tambourines and blow the shofar and wave the flags and all is for Jerusalem. So that would have been worth tens of millions of votes right there. So from a political point of view, it was a brilliant move by Donald Trump. Whether he believes it's significant or important, I don't know. Personally, I think it's fairly irrelevant, except as a public relations move to guarantee you tens of millions of votes, outstanding. Fairly meaningless otherwise.
It was interesting that you got a lot of flack from the media.
Oh, from the left,
for
yeah.
The move.
Yes.
Sure. But if the entire state of Jews is actually not a far left idea, but you know, the evil behind the curtains is actually.
They are very left wing. Because in America, well, anything Trump does is something to be criticized from those characters. I mean, he could be Mother Teresa and I'd still hate him. It doesn't matter what, I mean, he could save who knows what and it would still be something to attack. Totally. He could find a cure to cancer and they'd still damn him for it. I don't think it's the issues, it's just the fact that they hate him. But as far as moving the embassy to Jerusalem, you know, honestly, I don't see it as particularly important, but I don't see a big deal for or against it. And If I was in his position, which I can't imagine because I've got no political aspirations, if that's worth a few tens of millions of votes, it's going to make a lot of people happy. Okay. What harm can it do? But it does look like Trump's administration makes a lot of pro-Jewish decisions. For example, getting into wars that they shouldn't, throwing missiles into Syria for no good reason. And Trump spoke against that when he was a candidate. He spoke against all these no-win wars, these worthless wars, bring the troops home, defend our own borders, get out of the Middle East, shouldn't be in Iraq, shouldn't be in Afghanistan, shouldn't be in Syria. And he has pulled a lot back. But it's incredibly hard to get the deep state out of these, the whole military-industrial complex, colossal. But America's been used as mercenaries for Israel on how many wars to weaken and destroy Israel's political enemies and potential military threats in the Middle East. And the end result is not just that America's hated throughout the Middle East, but Christians are hated throughout the Middle East. And that's, it's made the work of missionaries much harder. So, for example, when I started as a brand new Christian doing Muslim evangelism in the Malay Quarter, Borkop, I was initially so filled with the average Christian pro-Israel, pro-Zionist nonsense that I tried to argue with Muslims in Borkop, can you imagine, defending the state of Israel and defending America's support for him and so on. And I remember the older missionary who was training me, taking me to one side and saying to me, you know, it's not going to get anyone any closer to heaven if you... You'll never convince a Muslim of anything that Israel's... the big Satan, and America's the small Satan, you know, to them, this is the devil incarnate. So, but even if you got them to admit it, which they won't, it's not going to get them any closer to Christ. Stick to the Bible, stick to Jesus, stick to salvation, God, you know, way of salvation, that sort of thing. And that was good advice. And I must say, over the years, I've come to think, you know, it's not justifiable. Why did I think that just because America did or Israel did it, that it's right? Chemical warfare is wrong. Phosphorus bombs are wrong. Bombing civilians is wrong, even if it's done by the Israeli Defense Force. And the way they're behaving in there is absolutely disgusting, and I think it's indefensible. And for America to be killing one person with one drone missile in the Middle East, totally indefensible. And what has the result been? Terrorism, Islamic terrorism in America before war on terrorism was insignificant. But since 9/11 and America getting involved in the Middle East, incidence of terrorism has gone so high, and Islamic terrorism in America too. And how many hundreds of thousands of Americans have been crippled in this war? Tens of thousands killed, and millions of civilians in the Middle East killed by American action. Millions. The numbers of people killed in Iraq alone just defies imagination. What they've done in destroying the zoo in Baghdad with their missiles, and the museums and artifacts going back millenniums, and the destruction and looting, and for what? There were no weapons of mass destruction in Baghdad. Nobody ever believed there were. It's a lie. They got everyone involved in a complete lie. Iraq had no connection with the attacks on 9/11. It's just as Iraq was the biggest military in the Middle East and Israel's most potential sizable enemy. And Syria is the next biggest military. But Iraq and Syria had had something in common. They were the freest countries in the Middle East for Christians. Iraq and Syria had the largest number of Christians in the Middle East. And Syria still does. And in fact, nowhere in the Middle East do Christians have better treatment than under Syria right now, under Assad. And who's a fine person, actually, a medical doctor trained in England, who's got huge amounts of Christian support. In fact, in the military, just about every Christian man in Syria is in the army, because they know the only thing standing between them and ISIS and being beheaded and so on is the secular government of Assad that's protecting him, which in the Middle East is about as good as you can get. And so why America is trying to destroy Assad, Syria, and bombing the living daylights of these people. Russia saved Syria from falling because they're Orthodox Christians. And you will see, you can go on and see the pictures of Assad and his wife in churches on Easter and Christmas, surrounded by Christians with obvious love for them, see churches packed with soldiers wearing Syrian military uniforms, because the Christians and every missionary I know in Syria, they're all totally support Assad. They're all against America and NATO's war against Syria, and they're all for Russia's involvement that saved Syria from falling to ISIS, who had been funded by Barack Hussein Obama's CIA. He's the one who got ISIS growing. The first week that Barack Hussein Obama was in office, he released this Marxist mass-murdering terrorist, al-Baghdadi, was it, who started ISIS. And this... Sorry?
Al-Baghdadi.
Yeah, correct. And then there was also the bagman. Who was this ambassador who got killed? Ambassador Stevens, who got killed in Benghazi in 2013. Ambassador Stevens was the bagman. He took the first $500 million to ISIS to get them rolling. America funded and started ISIS. Why? To overthrow Syria. Why? Because Israel wanted them to. And next thing you know, ISIS is killing how many Christians and causing how many terrorist things all over the place? Insane. It's a cesspit. We should never have gotten involved. Well, when I say we, Americans should never have got involved. I'm not American. But Britain got involved too. NATO got involved. It's just... Christians should stay out of it. It's none of our business. But unfortunately, because Donald Trump has a Jewish son-in-law, Kushid, what's his name?
Jared
Kushid. Jared Kushid. He is a leftist. Trump even says he's a leftist. And when he listens to his daughter, he makes bad decisions, like launching 60 missiles into Syria, things like that. It's just insane. Donald Trump's instincts are good. But the advice of his son-in-law and daughter are uniformly bad. And there's this tension, because, of course, you understand the president is limited as to what he knows and what people let him know and what's given to him, so on. But while I like and support Donald Trump in general, that doesn't mean everything he's done is right. And I think America's ongoing support for the state of Israel is giving America nothing but extra terrorism. And targeting their own people, quite aside from swallowing up the lives of how many people. When I travel around America, I don't just see men without legs and without arms in army uniforms. I see women without arms and legs. Because remember, Clinton put women into combat, the draft dodger. And so did old Barack Hussein Obama. And so they're sending American women into combat, and you see them in the airport walking with artificial leg or arm here and there, and just it's terrible what they've done. And for what? What possible reason does America have to be involved in the Middle East? Aside from oil. And even then, they've got enough oil in Alaska. And Donald Trump's the one who said that in his candidacy 4 years ago. We've got enough of our own oil if we just forget what these creeps are telling us to not... exploit your own oil in the Gulf and in Alaska. We don't need to be going to the Middle East. And he was speaking about, you know, stop these stupid oil wars. But they're not really oil wars. They're bankers' wars. Do you know how much money these characters make? For example, America goes in and bombs Baghdad and takes it. I mean, that's bad enough. But they stay there 13 years later. Which company gets the providing bottled water contracts, the medical packs, the daily ration packs, the reconstructing the roads and bridges which they bombed, the rebuilding the place? You know, there's some people who make billions out of these sort of contracts. And that's what drives this whole thing. America today has become an empire. In fact, Donald Trump spoke against it. America is not meant to be an empire. Bring our soldiers home, protect our own country. Under Barack Hussein Obama, American soldiers were in 156 countries of the world. How can you justify that? But this is the problem. You've got these banksters have got this view. And so to me, what's really dangerous is we've got a lot of Christians in South Africa, in Cape Town, friends of mine, who are absolutely in love with the secular state of Israel. They've got more enthusiasm for the state of Israel than they have for missions, the persecuted church, God's work, God's word. I think it's a cult. Daniela?
Sorry, you probably already covered this, but I've heard the arguments when people are supporting
That's not true. It's not correct to call Jesus a Jew. First of all, Jesus never called himself a Jew. He's the son of Abraham. He is the son of David. He is the son of God. He's the son of man. He's the Lord, Savior, Redeemer. There's many terms we get for God, but where in the Bible do we read people saying Jesus is a Jew? Now, bearing in mind that Jesus condemned Jews in John chapter 8 as being murderers, liars of their father, the devil is a murderer and a liar from the beginning. Why would you want to associate Jesus with those who said, we have no king but Caesar? Crucify Christ, release Barabbas, his blood be upon us and upon our children. Why would you want to associate people with that? With people today, who are the Jews of today? They're the people who run the banks. They run Hollywood. They run the pornography industry. They run the pedophile industry. People like Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein. Do you really want to? I say it's blasphemous to associate people with Jesus with Jew. Now, what happened in the trial of Christ? Jesus is brought before Pilate. And at some point, somebody said, he's a Galilean. And Pilate said, a Galilean? Send him to Herod. Now, if he was a Jew, he was under Pontius Pilate. But he's a Galilean. Ah, send him off to Herod. Because Herod now had Galilee. Was part, because after the death of the King Herod, the one who killed all the babies in Bethlehem, his sons, who are also called Herod and so on, like they had different parts. There's several Herods in the Bible. It gets a bit confusing. But Herod Antipas was up in Galilee. Now, Galilee, Jesus came from Galilee. You look at Galilee, Nazareth, that's actually quite far north. That's not, Jesus wasn't born Jerusalem. Well, he was born Bethlehem, but he was living up in Galilee. To say he's of the tribe of David is correct. So he would have been a Judean. But a Jew, the term Jew, the way it's used by many people today, are they talking about a Judean of the faith of David, a man after God's own heart, or are they thinking of these scribes, Pharisees, and Christ haters who said crucify him? So to me, why use an unbiblical term to describe Jesus?
John chapter 4 verse 22, Jesus is talking to the Samaritan woman, and then he said, the Samaritan woman said, well, we don't actually know where to worship, and Jesus said, we know where to worship, for salvation is of the Jews. And Jesus then identified himself as a Jew.
It seems that way. But you will search in vain in the Greek interlinear to find the word Jew there. There was the word Judean, but in many of our modern translations, they have been introducing Jew more to where it used to say Judean. There's a difference between a Judean and a Judahite or Jew, as they came to be. So the term has been, over the years, changed a lot. But anyway, in that sense, salvation came through the Judean people, through the line of David. But sadly, the vast majority of Jewish people have rejected Christ. Now, take another question. Was the Apostle Paul a Jew? He is from the tribe of Benjamin. But of tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin's identified with Judea, but they didn't take the side of Israel, they took the side of Judea and split. But again, a Benjamite is not a Judean. If you look at Mark, who wrote Mark's Gospel, he was a Levite of the Levite tribe. If you take the 12 disciples of Jesus, every one of his disciples, bar one, was from Galilee. Who was the only disciple who came from Judea? There's only one Jew amongst the 12 disciples of Jesus. All the rest were Galileans. You all know who his name is, Judas. Judas was the one Judean amongst them. All the others were from Galilee. Just an interesting thing, because Jesus didn't take one from this tribe and one from that tribe. And the whole bunch came from Galilee, and then there's just one exception, and that's old Judas. So, you see, when you realize that there's such a profitable industry to be made out of being Jews and getting Christians to think that, oh, if I could just touch the hem of his garment, I'll get some blessing, because if I bless them, it's a bit of superstitious mumbo jumbo, you know, stroke a rabbit's foot business thing for luck. If a rabbit's foot was lucky, it would be on a rabbit. And besides of which, who is salvation from? Yahweh. And Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus means Yeshua, or Yahweh saves. Salvation is of Christ. To get so caught up in the tribe and the place where he came through is like getting so excited about the wrapping paper and ignoring the present. And people have gotten... It seems that the devil so often distracts us into side issues. The central fact is Christ, solus Christus, and sola scriptura. So getting people into this... Imagine the fact that tens of millions of Christians in the world today have more enthusiasm for supporting the state of Israel than they have for fulfilling the Great Commission or preaching the gospel to the neighbors or helping the persecuted church. That shows you something's wrong. And I say all this as somebody who used to be as enthusiastic for the state of Israel as any. You know, as a new Christian, I thought that was it. You know, I accepted that just as with my baby's milk as a brand new Christian. You know, they're God's people and all that sort of thing. And I remember feeling this awe to be in the presence of a Jew, even if the person was an atheist who rejected Christ, because that's how we were taught. And this is, you know, 70s, Hal Lindsey, late great planet Earth, there's a new world coming, I wish we'd all been ready, and all that stuff, watching A Thief at Night. We were super excited about it. So I understand some people have gotten into it, but as I got into Muslim evangelism and a persecuted church, a whole new world opened up. But now, I've noticed something since 1994. As South Africans have lost our country and our enemies have come to rule over us, many have become Judaizers. They've moved into like a new culture and a new country, a new identity, and they've sort of identified with Judaism more. And so, oh, forget Sunday, it's now got to be Saturday worship. Forget the fact Jesus rose on the first day of the week. That's not so important. The important thing is the Jewish Sabbath. And they get more and more. We know people who started out with this way, who have ended up rejecting Christ and been converted to Judaism completely. People from Bible-believing evangelical Christians who were born again and all that, as far as we knew, who have apostatized. We know people have gone that far. And there's mountains of Christians in South Africa, especially amongst Afrikaans Christians, who have moved into this Judaizing, sacred name, Seventh Day, Sabbatarian type of things. And before you know it, they even tell you the New Testament's not that important. The really important thing's the Old Testament. And then Jesus becomes less and less important. And before you know it, they're even willing to reject Christ and become formally converted to Judaism. And we actually know cases of that, which is why I feel it's important to speak out about it. Other comments? Yes.
Touching on the, what we heard before, but I'm sort of starting to put the draw the lines together, because Jared Kushner, obviously, as we know, is running Donald Trump's foreign policy. And recently, obviously, there was the Middle East peace deal that we all celebrated between the UAE and Bahrain and Israel.
Yeah.
I guess we can see that that's probably just driven by money.
Probably. You can imagine there's a lot of money in oil in the Middle East. It could be. I didn't follow that particularly.
So they want to get Saudi Arabia on it as well. They want to get like seven other major nations in there.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing that Saudi Arabia and the State of Israel have been in bed with one another business-wise for a long time. There's been a lot of cooperation between them. Of course, the average Muslim regards Saudi Arabia as apostate for that very reason, that they are friendly with the State of Israel. But I'd be glad if they could all live with one another in peace. It normally says goodbye to us, but anyway, yes. Money talks. Other comments, questions, observations? Oh, they gave it to the World Food Program?
Yes.
How meaningless is that? But I suppose anything's better than having Donald Trump winning a Peace Prize, huh? from their point of view. The Nobel Peace Prize is highly compromised. And I know this for several reasons. We were friends with the family of P.W. Botha. In fact, P.W. Botha, I met him in his life when he was president, and we know his family well, especially Razan Botha, Razan Vasaki, now his daughter. And P.W. Botha actually told me that he was offered millions of dollars. I forget how many, which was a lot, especially at that time, but he was offered millions of dollars and a Nobel Peace Prize if he would release Mandela from prison. And in fact, he invited Nelson Mandela to Groote State when he is in prison, and said, if you will renounce violence, I'll set you free. And this back in the mid-80s. And Nelson Mandela would not. So P.W. Botha is a man of principle. He couldn't release somebody who's locked up for terrorism who wouldn't at least renounce it. So when F.W. de Klerk released Mandela and got his Nobel Peace Prize, P.W. Botha phoned him and said, F.W., I see that you got the Nobel Peace Prize that I was offered. So I presume you also got the $14 million, whatever it was. I forget the amount. And he said there was no denial from F.W.'s side. He just said, yes, but I wasn't told I had to share that Peace Prize. The American ambassador offered the president of South Africa, to President of South Africa, a Nobel Peace Prize if he would do this, which the American foreign policy won. I thought the Nobel Peace Prize was something independent that was to do with the Norwegian people. But when you look at it, they've actually got certain non-governmental organizations, certain international bodies, certain government heads. It's not a private, independent anything. The fact that you noticed that old Carter could get a Nobel Peace Prize for having brought, who was it, Begin and Sadat together for an Egyptian, and he had this nice posed picture in a rose garden, getting him to sign a peace accord between Egypt and Israel, and he got him a peace prize. And Clinton did the same thing in his time. He also did the same Carter pose with his hand on each man, the Egyptian leader and the Israeli leader, and he got a peace prize for that. And no, I think the peace prize was shared between, was it shared between the Israeli prime minister and the Egyptian prime minister? And then they did one where Yasser Arafat shared one with the Israeli prime minister, and when they did some peace deal between PLO. Remember that Yasser Arafat shared a Nobel Peace Prize? And so apparently the American ambassador can offer Nobel Peace Prize out as salted peanuts or something as incentives.
Didn't Barack Obama get one after a week in office?
Yes, he hadn't done anything yet, but he got a Nobel Peace Prize, I think, for being black. But anyway, black privilege. You can get a Nobel Peace Prize without doing anything. Then you can bomb 8 countries and kill tens of thousands of civilians. He managed to kill tens of thousands of civilians with his drone strikes. He ordered something like 18,000 drone strikes, world record of it.
18,000?
Yes, which each one killed more collateral damage than the person they were targeting. So he's the king of drone strikes. And he killed tens of thousands of people by personal execution order, or what do they call it? Terminate with extreme prejudice or executive decision, whatever they call it. They've got all these lovely euphemisms, and one of the lovely euphemisms of the Americans is collateral damage. That's when you kill civilians, it's collateral damage.
Wasn't it during Obama's presidency that the church of T.B. Joshua was bombed?
I haven't
they,
heard.
They expected that was also a drone.
I know what you mean, up in Nigeria, right, yeah. Don't know what was behind it, but I remember the report. Yes, so imagine that. You now can get peace prizes for bombing 8 countries and killing tens of thousands of civilians. Hey, I don't think that's exactly what Alfred Nobel had in mind. But somebody else has hijacked it since then, evidently. Oscars. What are Oscars? Oscars are a bunch of billionaires and millionaires swapping gold statues amongst one another, you know. I'll give you an Oscar this year, you give me one next year. You know, it's a mutual admiration society of a bunch of pedophiles who producing scummy movies. And they mostly give Oscars to make people interested and think, well, there must be something good about the film to go and see it. Well, I've discovered if something gets an Oscar, it's generally worth avoiding. If they're wanting you to see it, it's probably bad. I wouldn't consider an Oscar to be something positive. There was a time when it meant something, but that's a long time ago.
The Oscar is given by your peers.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yes. They set up amongst
themselves. Oh, so it's a whole incestuous thing.
Totally. So it's the producers and stars and scriptwriters and so on of Hollywood.
Closed house.
They arrange to... I'll give you this year. You give it to me this next year. You know, it's a complete and utter farce. It means nothing. You know? It's like Idi Amin giving himself a new medal, you know, while being dictator for life.
You're not allowed to be nominated. They made the rule this year. You're not allowed to be nominated for any Oscar unless you can show that any cast or anything that you've done, any film, had the correct diversity to it as well. Mm. You're not allowed to be nominated until you can prove that there was diversity.
Well, you know, it gets more and more meaningless.
Nobody watches it anyway. That's why they invite Ricky Gervais to destroy them.
You know, there was a time that I actually knew what happened at the Oscars. I haven't paid attention in years because it just becomes so pathetic. And then you get these characters wanting to scream political statements. And, of course, I think they've just been making anti-Trump statements at these more recent ones.
What's the Oscar? What's the statue of?
I don't know, probably some old idol from some Middle Eastern Baal worship or something.
Named Oscar.
But the last, wasn't the last Oscar, didn't somebody drop a bombshell there?
Could be.
Anyone get away?
There was a couple of bombshells.
The pedophilia, wasn't it?
It was lovely.
Oh, about old Weinstein.
Oh, you dropped all those.
Because Weinstein, all of these people knew what he was doing, and they were all still in his films, and then later they all act shocked. But, for example, you can get film footage of, for example, people like Meryl Streep making comments at the Oscars saying, well, now that you've got your Oscar, you don't have to pretend that you like Harvey Weinstein anymore. You know, and everyone laughs. They all knew what they're meaning, so that... the price of stardom in a Weinstein production was you had to prostitute yourself. And so this was all known, and suddenly they all act shocked. But then it comes out that a whole bunch of them have been doing it too. So, you know, it's just a bunch of sleazy con men, a whole bunch.
You threw it at them with the Jeffrey Epstein. He's like, oh, come on, we all know he was your friend. You had to come out on your own plane now, didn't you?
What, was this something someone was saying at the Oscars? Oh, my.
Lovely to watch.
Gee, well, I suppose he might not be as popular in the future. So, you know, you take somebody like Kirk Cameron. He was very popular in Hollywood. Then he gets born again. They wouldn't touch him. You're like dropped. You can see when Mel Gibson made The Passion of the Christ, after that, Hollywood hated him. They boycotted his film. They wouldn't let any of their theaters that are owned by Hollywood show the film, and yet became one of the 10 most successful films commercially in all of history. And so they hated him even more for that. And he doesn't have a chance of getting a good role anymore unless he produced the film himself. But fortunately, I think he's got enough money that he doesn't need them anymore. But it's that sort of vindictiveness in Hollywood. And again, they destroyed the careers of like Mia Sorvino, who's also one of the people who came out early, and she is one of the first to blow the whistle on Harvey Weinstein. When she is born again, Hollywood wouldn't touch her. That's why she's gone to films such as The Trade of Innocence and so on, making Christian films, exposing human trafficking and so on. But Mia Sorvino was, I believe, an Oscar-winning person before. But when she got born again and blew the whistle on Harvey Weinstein, they wouldn't touch her for any more Hollywood films. So it's an internal corruption. Hollywood, United Nations, World Council of Churches, the Beast, Antichrist, the whole bunch. I mean, I think they're all one happy family. Yes, if you can use that word. Unholy Alliance.
I've got a funny feeling that you're going to see a lot of them going.
I would hope so, indeed. Indeed, I would think so.
The far left have lost it. I mean, if you watch the confirmation hearings now of this Amy Coney Barrett, she's a Catholic mother of seven with two adopted children, and the Democratic senators asked her if she's ever committed sexual assault or if she supports white supremacy. Catholic mother of seven in the Midwest.
No,
it's adopted children from
but what's priceless is seeing her expressions, because.
Do you see how she holds up the book?
But somebody asked her to show what her notes are that she's using. It must have been a Republican who's just wanting to make a point. But when she's asked the question, "Have you ever committed sexual assault on someone?" But her expression is priceless. Is she? No, but she must be looking at this person like. How can you be so idiotic as to ask such a stupid question? Her whole life just shows where she stands. Yeah, as I say, mother of seven, asking dumb questions like that. These Demorats are brain dead.
The one spent, I think, half an hour with charts and everything, trying to show that the whole Supreme Court nomination is sponsored by the deep state. And so Ted Cruz just stood up and he's like, listen, guys, you're going to go about deep state, you Democrats. The top 500 companies are paying you guys more than this, and the guy's just like, you just wasted half an hour of my life.
Mm. Yeah.
And they won the stupidest award, that's for sure. By far. I mean, they threw everything at Brett Kavanaugh, now they've got nothing.
Indeed. I've got notes for tonight. Latest Gospel Defense League newsletter, so it's got some of the pictures, and if you have got some skeptical people and you want to give them some evidence or go through the verses again and the different facts there they are with the sources and so on. So, you've got your notes, and we will make an audio and we'll make a video of this available very soon. And of course, remember, our home education fair coming up end of the month.